And now our first interview this morning for the local news hour, we have Tom Noker. He's the president of the South Summit Trails Foundation Board, and Amber Nelson, who is treasurer. You all have some kind of innovative and exciting projects going on. Well, one in particular that Tom was talking about earlier, involving development of a trail partnering with the National Forest Service. And I'd like to first kind of get a little bit of a background, just a reminder about the history of the South Summit Trails Foundation. It's a relatively new group in the county. And Tom, maybe you can start by telling us a little bit about the beginnings of that organization, and then Amber can get on and tell us a little bit more about the partnering that's going on with the Forest Service.
Yeah, Carolyn, thanks for having us, and good morning. We're in our third year now. So it is still a pretty new organization. I think it's important to note that we are all volunteer. We have no paid staff. We have all volunteer work on the board of directors and members. So whenever we're doing trail work or whenever we're doing any planning or, in Amber's case, working on grant applications, that's all volunteer work. And so all the money that we raise through all those efforts and all the work that we do goes straight into the trails. And we're trying to continue to do that for a while. I think the beginning of a nonprofit like this relies heavily on that type of volunteer work. And so we're pretty consistent with that continuing. We have a number of projects that we're working on right now in conjunction with Summit Land Conservancy, the City of Oakley, the county, all teamed up for a project in Oakley. The Stevens property was acquired, and we've created a trail there. It's a small trail, and I kind of look at it as sort of Oakley's Oscarthorpe. It involved a number of entities to acquire the ground and to build the trail and to dedicate it, and so that's a small mile, 1.1-mile trail that's a part of a bigger system that we hope to connect. Another piece is the Franson property to the north and east, a trail on about 30 acres of ground that was started and then more or less just, I wouldn't say abandoned, but certainly neglected for years, and we've come back in and resurrected that. And then there's another project further to the north near the Oakley Water Tank area that we're working on right now. We're also looking for funding for that. Amber's written some grants. We hope to pull in the funding and begin that project this summer. And that will be, again, there was a trail there that was sort of a mystery. It was built a while ago as part of the Oakley Trail, maybe a half a mile. It involves some bridges over wetland, and it's fairly extensive, but it didn't go anywhere, and now we're making it go somewhere. We're going to turn it into basically a loop. It'll be for mountain biking. A certain portion of it, about a mile and a half of it, will be more or less a flow trail through the trees below the water tank area off of Boulderville Road. That ground is owned by Oakley, so again, partnership with Oakley and the South Summit Trails Foundation. We hope to start that trail this summer and complete it this summer. And then, again, another partnership with the town of Oakley, in this case, to extend the Oakley Rodeo Grounds Trail and turn it into a loop. It was when the Oakley Rodeo Grounds were moved from their original location to the new location, and there was a trail that was partially built around the grounds, and it'll be about a mile, I think 1.1 mile total. And half of it's built now. We're just going to continue that and continue that loop. So if you looked on a map, these are all sort of pearls on a string, so to speak, on the Oakley Trail that we've planned from the mouth of Weber Canyon all the way into the Wooden Shoe area. That involves a much bigger project with a number of private landowners, all in negotiations with the town of Oakley and the counties involved there and in places. That's not a project that I or we anticipate completing in a short term.
The
connection and making right. that a full, roughly 6 mile connection. And it's beautiful. It's right along the Weber River, which is the entire way. from the mouth of the canyon to the Wooden Shoe Road. And that's part of, well, Franson property borders the river, that small trail, and then the Stevens Grove trail also. Those are basically pearls in the string that we've been able to negotiate and get in place and on the ground.
Right, so cobbling together
this
connectivity.
Yes, as we go, yeah, they become a part of the larger plan. And again, that's not something that's going to happen in the near future. There are a lot of moving parts, and they're all in play.
Right, right, so, and private landowners and development
landowners
and city properties
and city property.
Wetlands and, right.
And so wetlands.
Lots
and
of
yeah,
things.
So you're working with a bunch of entities, and it's complicated, but it's fun. And even though it's not completed now, the portions that are benefits.
Right, and well, this is really amazing progress, I think, after just a couple, 3 years of being in existence.
Yeah, thanks.
You know,
yeah.
So hats off on that. Amber, so let's talk a little bit about your grant writing work with South Summit Trails. A little bit of a blurb there. Also mentioning that you work with Summit Land Conservancy as a real job, and then your volunteer work with the South Summit Trails. But let's talk a little bit about that grant writing work and what your what this project is going on right now with the National Forest Service.
Sure. Well, the one of the biggest landowners around us in South Summit is the U.S. government and the Forest Service property. The Forest Service had approached us about working with them on a project in the Slate Creek Yellow Pine area. We have started applying for some initial grants for that. They have started working on the NEPA process to make sure that we can do some trails in that area. It could be a fairly extensive system, up to 40 or so miles, I think.
So what is the environmental process, NEPA, involve? And how are you involved in that?
Our partners at the Forest Service are on that and taking care of most of that at this point. They'll get us involved with that when we need to. But since there is already some existing trail there, it should be, you know, kind of just a recompletion of that process.
Okay, and there's a trailhead parking for Yellow Pine.
Yep.
And would that be the same kind of starting point?
Yep,
it would
be the same.
And it's kind of low down on Mirror Lake Highway too, isn't it?
Yep, it's right before the fee station.
Okay. And so what would happen to the existing trails? Because right now they're probably not terribly bike friendly.
Well, they're not. They were never designed for cycling. They've always been multiple use trails. With the Forest Service, the folks that we've been working with there, they indicated to us that they wanted to actually build mountain bike trails, that they knew that there was a need to separate the uses in some places. They didn't have the manpower to pull that off. I mean, our Forest Service has been, I wouldn't say gutted, but it's been working on a, you know, small budget. And anyway, we had done some volunteer work with them for the first couple of years, and they came to us and said, would you be interested in being the lead on this? And we said, absolutely. That's right down our alley. And so that's how this started. To go back to the NEPA process, partially done on that property, not completed. And it involves everything from soils analysis, vegetation, artifacts, old mining claims that may or may not have been, you know, started. So it's a very, very thorough process. Usually takes 2 to 4 years to complete. But they've already started it, and it's already partially complete. So to put a finer point on it, we're probably not looking at shovels in the ground until 2019. Spring of 2019 or perhaps early summer of 2019.
That's closer than we think.
it comes right up, you know, and when you combine that with the other projects that we're doing, and we're pretty darn busy. Mm-hmm. So
how much funding do you need to really get this going and make it happen?
As much as we can get.
Well, for phase one, which will probably be somewhere 3 to 4 miles, we're looking at a total of probably 110,000, 120,000 to get those done.
Okay. And what kinds of events are coming up for those efforts of fundraising, if any?
Nothing planned specifically for that trail yet. We do have our annual fundraiser on June 8th, and all of the funds raised there go directly to trails.
Okay. Tell us about that, Amber. What is the June 8th
event? It's at Cattleman's Hall in Oakley from 5:30 to 8:30 on June 8th. Dinner is $10 for adults, $5 for kids. We have live music and a silent auction, kids games, and a bake sale, which the bake sale goes over very well.
I'll be there.
It's a great value.
It is.
Wow, $10. That's maybe you should beef that up a little bit. No pun intended.
It works very well for us out there.
How can people find out more about what South Summit Trails is doing? If they want to be involved, volunteer, donate, just know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Everything is on our Facebook page. It's South Summit Trails or southsummittrails.org.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming in, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Carolyn.
Okay. Thank you.
You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Our next guest is Eileen Gallagher, and her website says she is a pediatrician, a mother, a volunteer, and a Senate District 26 candidate. Senate District 26, for those who are not familiar and following how our districts work, is a sprawling district. It encompasses five counties, Daggett, Duchesne, Uinta, Wasatch, and Summit counties. And we have Eileen Gallagher here. She is one of the Democratic primary candidates who will be running in the primary election June 26th. Thank you for coming. Welcome.
That's right. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So this is just the basic question. What's prompted you? Why would you do this? It sounds like you have a very rich and full life as volunteer activist, mother, pediatrician.
Well, they say if you want something done, give it to a busy mother. But I am actually joining the race because I feel that I am not able to do my job as a pediatrician well because of our Utah legislature and decisions they have made about managing healthcare policy in our state. And I see day to day the effects that has on destabilizing families, on limiting children's health, and on making the job of physicians who want to do an excellent job harder. Now, healthcare policy is my area of expertise. So as a first-time candidate, one would think, why jump into such a sprawling district in such a big area? But healthcare policy is decided at the state level, not at the local level. I also am someone who works with clinics in medicine to help them get new clinics up and running. So I'm very interested and good at the business side of medicine. And three of our industries that provide a huge number of jobs in this sprawling district are healthcare, tourism, and energy. And we actually have a great need for expanding our healthcare resources in many of the counties in the district. And I feel that I could play a role in that as well.
Right. So there are some ballot initiatives, mm-hmm. One of which is to expand Medicaid in Utah, which since the ACA went into effect some 8 years ago. It's
too long ago.
Too long ago. But there is finally the legislature made a little bit of a move towards accessing some of those ACA funds, but maybe not quite enough. So there's a group of advocates who have put in place a ballot initiative. They've received the signature certification on the petitions. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on that? What are your thoughts?
I am all for initiatives in general. I think that initiatives occur when legislatures like ours are not being responsive to the needs of the population. And that our legislature has ignored the requests of Utah citizens to expand their access to affordable and to excellent health care. And that's why we have the initiative. So I'm all for it. I would love to expand Medicaid even further. I actually am someone who thinks that we ought to have universal access to Medicaid. I think that's a good business decision for the Medicaid program. And I think that it is an efficient and effective way of providing an access to affordable and good health care for our citizens.
Okay. And we're looking at a primary. If you win the primary, mm-hmm. you will be going up against the three Republicans who are also in the primary, mm-hmm. Two of them, and then one United Utah candidate.
Yes.
Which could potentially really divide a vote for, mm-hmm. I guess it could go either way, experts say. But Pat Vaughn, who's from Wasatch County, has also come away with a position on this primary ballot. Mm-hmm. How do you two differ?
Well, you're right. It's a lot of candidates in this race. It's a very busy race this year. And what I would like to see, regardless of who wins which primary and how votes may be split, is that we have great voter turnout. So I'm actually working hard on trying to get people who feel disenfranchised or who have never participated before to be involved. We tend to have terrible voter turnout in this district. In the last several elections, we have had on average in the 30 percentile range, which is not adequate for coming up with citizens who are engaged and candidates who can represent them. So I would really like, and I'm working hard with canvassing and phone calling and the rest, to get people out to vote. If we have a high voter turnout, I think that we can count on the citizens in picking a candidate who would represent them. Now, I really don't think our Republican candidates from Uinta are a good choice for the district. I think that they very clearly have stated, as clearly as they are able to, that they would, number one, advocate for taking back our public lands and distributing them to the state government, which means the Republican Party, we would assume, for development and economic use. I think that they have shown that they are not sensitive to the needs of our Native American population, which is substantial out in Duchesne and in Uinta County. And there has been some reluctance to be a promoter of issues on the Wasatch backside of the district. So I really think that for many reasons, this is the year to not vote Republican. And in fact, I would advocate for everyone listening that for those people who tend to vote the R ticket and just vote for whoever the Republican is, this is not the year to do that. We have suffered as a state because of our Republican monopoly in the legislature, and we need a diversified legislature. Right now, we have a legislature that is full of developers and real estate agents and business people, and that has not served us well.
Right. So there are an inordinate number of ballot initiatives this mm-hmm. year, the medical marijuana piece, the Count My Vote. They did withdraw the school, the school ballot
yes,
initiative.
Thanks to the clever compromise that was made.
Because of the compromise, mm-hmm. right. So is that a sign that people are really seeking some voice in all of this because the current legislature isn't?
I think so.
Representing?
And yet the next step in having a voice is to vote in June.
So let's talk about a voice. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, there is that issue of showing up for the primary and then mm-hmm. showing up for the general midterm election. But how you live in Park City, mm-hmm. How is it that you understand what the real needs are of that eastern part of that Uinta Basin area?
Well, I think that we have been served well in the Utah legislature when we have elected people who are physicians, teachers, people who come from professions where they are trained to be listeners. I also, as a pediatrician, have been someone who can see a patient who is from Park City or who is from a rural district. I have patients who drive from Wyoming, and it doesn't matter who they are or where they're from. They are coming to consult with me because they have a problem, and their problem is a sick child usually, or wanting to promote the health care of their child and prevent problems. And I can have that discussion regardless of who someone is. I think that works well on the east side of the district as well as the west. We are all actually looking for the same things. Whether one is in Daggett or Duchesne or Uinta, we all want safe and excellent schools. We all want affordable health care. We all want our children to be safe. And we all want a diverse economy that is thriving. And those issues are going to be a part of this election. And I feel that I can, as a result of my professional training, address those things well.
So how should you address that issue of the extraction business that really drives the economy in that part of the state? And then, you know, of course, you've got, you know, Wasatch County, which is mm-hmm. an entirely different
right.
animal.
Booming.
Booming. Yeah. Explosive.
So when one looks at Utah as a whole, it is true that energy is a major part of our economic growth. Yet our face to the world, our major driver of industry is our beautiful land, our tourism, and our access to open spaces. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive, and I don't want to sound like a hopeless idealist in saying that. But to give an example, back in at the turn of the century, when cars were being invented, I'm sure there were a lot of people advocating for horse-drawn buggies as an industry. And when electricity was being invented, there were a lot of people who suffered because whaling and heating homes with whale oil was becoming less of a percentage of the energy industry there. We will always have a need for coal and always have a need for oil, but I would love it if we could change the perspective to the long term and recognize that we will have 20% of our energy needs as a state and nation from renewables soon. That's an economic opportunity. We should want to be having a piece of that pie. We can expect as well that within 10 years, most cars are going to be electric. We should want a piece of that pie. That is an opportunity for our people, regardless of what county they live in. Plus, when one talks to folks in Uinta, they complain about their boom and bust. Their economy is so dependent on coal and oil. They pay the price with families and communities that are less stable because of the boom and bust cycle. It is worth their while to diversify. Well, how can one do that? Obviously, promoting some of the tourism industry out there would be key. There's an airport out in Vernal that has been neglected, and having air access to that area would be great. That's something a state legislator and a legislature can promote. They have terrible roads. That needs to be addressed. A second opportunity would be healthcare. There are not enough doctors and there are not enough hospitals out on the east side to provide care. Most people out there drive to Salt Lake for their care. And that's not acceptable. So that's another driver of economy that could be promoted by the state. And then lastly, it's true that we need to recognize that energy does play a role in our state. I just would encourage people to think of it as a business plan. Give me a business plan that shows that your portion, whether it's coal or oil or renewables or natural gas, and show me how you can promote the most jobs that provide a living wage, a stable economy, and a stable community, and let's make that happen.
Okay. So one more question just about the numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, it looks to me like Kevin Van Tassel, mm-hmm. who is retiring after 12 years.
Yes.
And he's a banker from mm-hmm. Vernal. He won 16,000 votes, nearly 16,000 votes in 2014. And then the challenger, the Democratic challenger, just 6,600. Is mm-hmm. this just an uphill battle because of the way it's districted?
It is a tough battle, that is for sure. I think that the sad part about those numbers, though, is we have 100,000 people in the district. And that was an election where we had in almost 30,000 people vote. And so, yes, 16,000 to 6 is a remarkable number, but the sad part is the total. And then it's true that when one has a D next to your name, a Democrat rather than Republican, that is perceived of as a huge hindrance and maybe even makes it non-winnable. I don't think so. I think this year is different. I think this year people are looking for candidates who aren't going to take part in this Republican group that really has not served our state. I think that people, to be honest, have an obligation to be thoughtful voters. I vote for Republicans once in a while. I vote for Democrats often. I've been an independent most of my life, actually. And a thoughtful voter should actually consider voting for someone from another party if that person can best serve the citizenry.
Thank you, Eileen. So where can people find out more about you?
I have a webpage, GallagherForUtahStateSenate.org, and you can access me that way, as well as my cell phone and other information on there.
Excellent.
Thank
Good
you.
Good luck in the primaries. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it. 3.
Good morning. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Next guest is the this will be the NAC Barn Party that's coming up on June 2nd. And I've got Birchie Benton, who's the events manager with the NAC, along with Carrie Cusimano with the NAC.
Yes.
Do I have the right people? And thanks for coming in, just arriving now. We appreciate you guys letting us know what's going on at the NAC with your annual volunteer recognition. Okay, go ahead. There we go.
June 2nd is our annual barn party. It attracts families and people of all ages to the NAC to raise funds for our equestrian programs.
Okay, and what does the barn party entail?
Well, the barn party, we're in our 11th year, and it really is a family-friendly event. We have food, of course, barbecue. We have kids' activities like mechanical bull and roping and games. Face painting. We'll have a silent auction as well as a live auction. And really a little bit of a focus and some more about our programs. We'll talk a little bit about that and really recognize them.
So this is kind of focused on the equestrian program through the NAC. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
Talk a little bit about what that program entails, who you provide experiences for, and how big it is, and that kind of thing.
Sure. So we
and
start,
this is Carrie.
Yep.
Thanks,
yep.
Carrie.
We start out pretty much ages two or three with our hippotherapy program. There's something about kids being on the horse that makes that cognitive connection, and or the movement of the horse really helps with creating motion in your legs if you have an inability to walk or have some challenges. So there's the hippotherapy program, there's adaptive horseback riding, and then we also do equine assisted learning. So various programs starting with young ones on up to pretty much any age.
Okay. And as far as achievements, are there participants who will be at the party at the event as well? And will there be a focus on what they've accomplished themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. We try to get as many participants in our equestrian programs to come and join in the event. We'll show a short video highlighting a participant and sort of give a little bit more scope to what happens within the programs.
Okay.
And there's one family in particular that we will feature that talks about, you know, how they get started in the program and the progress that they've made, and, you know, featuring that during the main program, which is pretty inspiring to see.
Yeah. So the NAC has been around for, what, 30 years?
Over 30 years, yeah.
Over 30 years. And there must be a lot of people that have been helped. I mean, in your website, you talk about people that didn't think they could walk, didn't think they could talk, that kind of thing. And so... So how do you, I mean, yeah, how do you guys manage that and recognize it and celebrate that? Is there some kind of big event that, you know, you take and look at the kinds of, you know, the kinds of kids or wounded warriors or that type of thing that come? Is there some type of event that covers that?
Well, I think we celebrate it every day. The National Ability Center focuses on ability, and it may be one lesson where someone sees that shift, or it may be a session lesson, or they may be coming here for a camp. We do have events throughout the year where we're celebrating it, including the barn party. The next event is then our Summit Challenge cycling event, which takes place later in August, where we may be teaching someone how to ride an adaptive bike, and then they accomplish a 16-mile ride. So I feel like we're doing that throughout the year through our various programs. We're open 365 days and we're always working with people to overcome challenges.
And how do people get involved? Do they submit some kind of application and talk about their disability, and do they have to qualify in order to be involved, or how does it work?
Yeah, so they go ahead and submit an application online. And if there are scholarship needs there, certainly we assess their abilities. To determine which, you know, classes, whether that's equestrian or cycling, And then we fit them with the appropriate group. And then if their scholarship needs, we've never turned anyone away. And we don't ask about their financial situation. We honor all scholarships at the National Ability Center. So all anyone needs to do is go online, fill out that application. We do an assessment of, you know, which programs make the most sense, whether that's summer camps or session lessons. And then if there's a financial need there, they work with our team to set that up.
And do you have revisits as well, or is it a one-time thing where, you know, you'll have a class come in for a ski program and then they never come back again, or how does that work?
It's a combination of both. We have groups that come to us on a regular basis. Local school comes to us once a week to do their, you know, PE class, and they work on the climbing wall and different programs. You know, we'll have a veteran group that comes in for a weekend, and then, you know, we've often found that we bring in veteran groups to, let's say, do a weekend retreat, and then that veteran will bring his family back, and then they work on a, you know, a family connection. Because we often find that when veterans come back from their service and there's some healing that needs to be done, they may do that as an individual, but there's also a need for them to connect with their families. And so it may be initially a one-time visit, but then we encourage them to come back with their family. So we're very flexible in that mm-hmm. sense.
Well, and circling back to the barn party, this is to celebrate your volunteers. How many volunteers are you typically operating
with? Gosh, it's over 1,200 a year. Yeah. Currently, it may even be higher than that.
But it's probably growing.
You know, we are so blessed to have the volunteers that we have. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without them. And so, yes, this does honor our volunteers and our equestrian programs. And yes, there'll be many families coming to the event who participate in those programs. And we're excited for it.
Yep.
Well, good. Hopefully it will turn into summer by June 2nd. That would be nice.
There are still tickets left.
Are there? Okay. There, yeah. Let's get some details on that.
So you can sign up online. You go to our website, www.discovernac.org, and find the barn party. It's 5:30, like we said, on June 2nd to 10, and bring your whole family. It'll be fun.
I noticed that there was a lot of Western wear. Is that
absolutely
something that people
yes.
really indulge
cowboy
in?
Cowboy boots, yep. Bring your hat.
Some boots
absolutely.
And hats and kerchiefs.
And there's, you know, High West whiskey for the adults, and Red Rock will be there as well, and Chip McMullen from St. Regis will be out there grilling, so we're lucky to have his support.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Well, good. Thanks for coming in, ladies. Appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Come
Thank
join
you.
Us.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray. Our next guests... Looks like we've got a few people coming in from the city. We have Logan Jones. He is with the Trails Department at the Park City Municipal. Mary McClarity, apologies. Dave Thacker and Sarah Jo Dickens, welcome. They're here to talk about noxious weeds, which is just a great word to say. let's talk about noxious weeds. What are you here to tell us, Logan, about noxious weeds?
Well, we've all got a problem. Noxious weeds are a problem. It can be scary, but if you know something, it can be a lot less scary. So what we're trying to do today is just talk a little bit about noxious weeds and try to educate and get people aware, because it's a problem that basically we're all sharing, because weeds don't have any property boundaries. They spread.
Yeah. So how do we get to know something about noxious weeds? How do we even tell what a noxious weed is?
So we've got some great resources on our website. If you go to parksy.org and then under the government tab, there's a noxious weed subheader, and click on that and it'll get you some pictures. It'll get you to, you know, what is a noxious weed? How do I control them? And there's resources for how to ID. It takes you to a couple other websites that are just specifically about IDing noxious weeds.
And what happens if, let's say, you have a lot, and it's covered in what's considered a noxious weed? What is the responsibility of that owner, of that property owner?
Well, maybe I'd throw this to Mary if she wants to answer, but 'cause she's in our kind of code enforcement, but basically
it's the responsibility of a property owner to control noxious weeds on their property. And that's a state code, county code, municipal code. And the county has a list of different weeds that they, well, some in addition to the state weed list that are specific trouble here in Summit County. And that list is also on our website, too.
Okay, so what do you do?
So it is the responsibility of the homeowner to control the noxious weeds. And from a code compliance standpoint, we want to educate the homeowner or the property owner of what a noxious weed is and that they have them present on their property. A lot of times, you know, in Park City, we've got second homeowners or people who aren't here all the time, and they're not aware of what the noxious weeds in this area are or that they're even present on their property. So a lot of times they're very grateful when we let them know that we've noticed them on their property. Usually the first response we get is we send a letter letting them know that we've noticed noxious weeds on their property. And usually that's all we have to do is let them know that they're present and they take care of them right away.
How do you take care of them?
I'm going to kick that to Sarah Jo.
Sarah Jo.
So I would also like to point out that Summit County has a lot of resources. And so if you're not right in Park City, you will probably want to reach out to Dave Bingham. He's our Summit County weed supervisor. And I think one way that you can get areas controlled, a lot of people already hire landscapers. And if you're hiring a landscaper, I would suggest making sure that their crews are sort of up to speed on what the current noxious weeds are, because they should, as part of the job that they're doing, be controlling those weeds in your properties. If you don't have somebody that's doing your own landscaping, you can go out to Summit County, and I'll let Logan explain what's out there, but they do have a program where they can sell you different herbicides, and these are herbicides that you can't get at Home Depot, but also don't require a applicator's license. So it is legal for the resident to spray these herbicides, and they're way more effective on the noxious weeds that we're targeting. So maybe Logan can talk about that program.
Yeah, and I'd like to just mention too that it's not just herbicides that are for controlling noxious weeds. There's basically three main ways. That's manual, so that's like either pulling or plowing or something
mowing.
Of that, or mowing. Yeah. There's a time and place for all of these, you know, not when it's in seed. You don't ever mow anything when it's in seed, because you'll just be spreading seed everywhere. And then there's herbicides, so sprays. And then there's biocontrol, so, you know, insects that actually attack those certain types of weeds. And that's not available for every type of weed. But so then to kick it back to what the Summit County has as far as resources is, it's great. I mean, I have some white top on my property. So I went down there and talked to Dave Bingham and just told him what I had on my property, or I took a pic. You can also take a picture. He's a great resource. He'll let you know what it is if you're unsure. You know, it could even be a native something, so you might want to just leave it alone. But I was at Home Depot the weekend before, and I saw some herbicide for like over $100. I went there and bought something the same size for exactly what I needed for $20. So, I mean, he's selling it at a wholesale cost to really just try to help us out and help the county out. Because if we don't control the weeds, basically it's just going to be a problem for everybody.
Right. And so, are there places throughout the city that are worse than other places?
You know, there's certain areas where there's certain types of weeds that are more rampant. Yeah. So, I mean, in Old Town, and basically one of the main concerns at the moment for noxious weeds is garlic mustard. And I think that's one that people don't know because it doesn't maybe look like your typical thistle.
I love the sound of it. It sounds like something I would want to put on my baguette.
You totally could. You could make
really
a pesto out of the leaves, actually. It is edible, right?
It is edible, and it's pretty tangy.
Tangy, so, okay.
You like a tangy sauce on your sandwich? Yeah. Throw that on there.
Yeah, okay. So, and garlic mustard, it has been in the news a little bit lately, hasn't it? There's been some concern about how it gets spread on just the bottom of your footwear, or, you know, that it just is really...
It's so basically, I mean, we kind of skipped this, but noxious weeds are deemed noxious because They're aggressive, and they overcompete with native species, and then it affects forest health and habitat and food for the native plants and animals.
And so, with garlic mustard, one of the things that's even more interesting about it is that it puts a chemical into the ground that prevents other plant species from being able to germinate. So if you're trying to reseed an area that has had garlic mustard, it'll take a while because those chemicals can stick around. They also, and this is kind of a nerdy thing that I can't help but say because I studied microbes, but one of the things garlic mustard does through these chemicals is interrupts the natural interaction between plants and fungus. And that's really important for a lot of our trees. You already see how our bark beetles have devastated large parts of our forests, and that's putting forests at risk for fire. Garlic mustard can help stress a plant out by interrupting all of that kind of network and communication between fungus and trees that help keep trees healthy and alive. So it seems like a tiny little plant that couldn't possibly have a huge effect, but it has a massive effect on forest health.
And it's not a natural plant for this area.
It came here native. Through. It came from Europe, I think, for...
Probably, because it's edible, it probably came in a garden as an herb, as many of our noxious weeds in this area have.
And Logan, you said that you see a lot of that in Old Town.
It's probably on more than 50% of people's property in Old Town. So I'd highly encourage anybody listening to go on our website, look at the county and state weed list, and familiarize yourself with what those species look like. In particular, garlic mustard, St. John's wort, Dyer's woad, white top, all the thistles, hound's tongue, Dalmatian, and yellow toad flax. Those are kind of main bigger problems in this area.
Mm-hmm. And there are 60 noxious weeds listed for the state of Utah, and 31 of them are present in our county. And then we also have an additional couple of species that the state doesn't list as noxious, but the county does, because it is within our county a problem financially and for the health of livestock, humans, domestic animals.
Well, great, guys. We have to wrap that up. Thank you for coming in and letting us know what's going on.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.